All right, thank you for that introduction, and thank you all for coming out today to listen to this talk. So today I'd like to talk about heat tolerance, but not just heat tolerance, but plasticity. So first things first, when we talk about heat tolerance, you can talk about any number of different processes, and this graph has a lot of information in it, but I'm not using it for that purpose. Essentially, there was this sort of long-standing debate about what the most heat-sensitive component of photosynthesis was under moderately high temperature stress. The reason I'm using this graph is not to discuss whether it's Rubisco activase or electron transport. It's to point out that this 35 degrees C, sort of this high temperature threshold, that once you get above that, and that's leaf temperature, I have to point out, that's leaf temperature, 35 degrees C. That's when you start to see declines in photosynthesis. Now, why do I have a rattlesnake on a talk about cotton? So the reason I have this, and I kind of like that I can actually put this in here, is that, like this rattlesnake, it was generally assumed that plants are essentially at the mercy of their environment. They are, let's see, what's the term, ectothermic poikilotherms. But a plant can't get up and move. It can't go find a burrow somewhere and hide. So essentially it was assumed for a long time that plants had very broad temperature optima. They could operate under a very broad range of temperature conditions, and it's since been shown that plants have fairly narrow temperature optima. And further, it's been shown that you can increase air temperatures up to 40 degrees C, and as we saw on that graph, that's enough to actually, in theory, if that was a leaf temperature, it's enough to negatively impact photosynthesis. But in this particular study, leaf temperatures, the greatest frequency temperature that they observed was around 27 plus or minus 2 degrees C. And what I think is interesting here as well, and I really wanted to point out, if you look at that 35 degree mark right there, that threshold that I mentioned earlier, you see none of these data points, even though air temperature's out here at 40 degrees C, none of them cross that line. All right, and once we get to 27 and below, canopy temperature, I guess in this case it was actually leaf temperature, tracks air temperature really well. All right. So this is sort of evidence for limited homeothermy. Now, if you're like me and you like to study heat stress in a crop, so a crop that likes to keep temperatures below air temperature, that might be a bit of an issue, justifying the relevance of that type of work. Well, take that a step further. Those of you, if you like fluorescence, if you do any sort of fluorescence work, there's another issue in that, and I know this is a busy graph, but this is the line for cotton here, all right? You don't see much of a decline until you get out to 45 degrees C, somewhere in that neighborhood. And I've seen it even higher than that, where plants exposed to different conditions, they will acclimate. All right, photosystem 2 in particular. And that's what we're generally looking at with fluorescence. So there's a potential problem there. So when does this sort of thing become relevant? When do these types of temperatures become relevant? So it's just showing the relationship between foliage temperature and vapor pressure deficit. These lines are deviations from the well-watered baseline here. All right. So under dry conditions or during soil drying, we have temperatures that can exceed that well-watered baseline, right? And in some instances, exceed air temperature. So you saw that graph that Tom just showed. We had temperatures that were actually somewhere around 45 degrees C. I didn't plan this, but it worked out really well. You actually do see those kinds of temperatures, particularly under drought stress conditions. So it's always been a question I've been interested in is, if drought is the factor that's influencing yield variability, does heat tolerance influence that? If you have greater heat tolerance or greater heat tolerance plasticity. So with regard to stability or plasticity, this is a method that's utilized for assessing yield stability. You don't have to know anything about the environment that crop was necessarily growing. And if you think about it, all kinds of things can influence yield or heat tolerance, whatever it may be, and you can't characterize everything. Or it's very unlikely that you'll be able to characterize everything. And so, these yield trials, essentially, what's done is an environmental index is developed, which is essentially the environmental mean, so all cultivars at a given location, the environmental mean minus the overall mean, the grand mean for that entire study. All right, so what does this mean? Negative numbers, below average yield. Positive numbers, above average yield. All right, so the slope of this line indicates yield stability. All right, so the slope of that line indicates yield stability. Now, could we do this with heat tolerance as well? And particularly with field-grown plants. That could be a bit of an issue, right? If you're talking about temperature stress. So you have to have a method, first, of assigning a heat tolerance, a value for heat tolerance at any given time, and then you could use a similar approach to assess the stability of any given cultivar. Now, the idea for this topic, there's a reference that essentially stated that genotypes that exhibit greater phenotypic plasticity to environment or cultural practices should also exhibit greater yield stability. So that's sort of the idea behind this. And so, as I said, I think as far as irrigation, I felt that this was a real opportunity. We had an irrigation study where we had it was two cultivars, okay? We need more than that, but we had two cultivars. And we had five different irrigation treatments. Three of those were based on pre-dawn water potential measured throughout the season, essentially measured pre-dawn water potential 3 days per week between 4 and 6 in the morning, which is a blast if you ever get a chance to do it. And I'm going to show that data just because it's quite a bit of data there. But anyway, the next thing that we did is essentially three times during the season, during squaring, first flower, peak bloom, periods, we measured temperature response of maximum quantum yield of photosystem 2. So we utilized this thermal gradient table that was designed for seed germination experiments. We'd run 20 samples at a time, and so we were able to screen run a fairly large number of samples, and could have done more if the study was larger, but I think we were doing good to get this done. So what about that number that we place on heat tolerance? So whenever we expose these leaf segments, again, from the field, you can take samples from the field. There's a real bonus to this with regard to getting information from field-grown plants. And what we did was we developed a temperature response curve, and the temperature causing a 15% decline from the optimum here is referred to as T15. So this is what we applied across the board as our measure of heat tolerance, regardless of sample date, cultivar, whatever that may be. Now, during the season, I feel obligated to show this. There's about 100 hours that went into this, prior to making the graph. So I feel sort of obligated to show this graph. But anyway, these are our sample dates for heat tolerance, and these are the different irrigation treatments through here as well. All right, so on this first sample date, which if you'll look there, we have fairly high water potentials here. These are the, let me look here. I may be off by a decimal point here. Let's see. Yeah, I've got pre-dawn water potential. Anyway, I believe I'm off by a decimal point here maybe. Yeah. Anyway, these are our highest water potentials here on the first sample date, and all of them were fairly similar, except the last one separated out from the well-watered control. On the second sample date, we had a lot more variability in terms of water potential. The well-watered was much lower. And then on this last sample date, we had all of these treatments, three through five, had lower water potential. If you look at just the average air temperature on each of these sample dates, and again using that 35 degrees C threshold, the first two sample dates were the air temperature during the sample period was below that threshold, and then on that last sample date we had air temperatures above 38 degrees. leaf temperatures. So everything's essentially on this sample date, everything had higher water potential, very similar water potential on this sample date. Leaf temperatures well below that 35 degrees C. Second sample date where we started to see some differences, if you look, again, treatment, the well-watered checkbook approach and then that lowest plant-based threshold, still well below 35, and now we're starting to get close to that 35-degree threshold. Last sample date, all the treatment 3 through 5, these are more stressed treatments, leaf temperature is well above that 35-degree threshold on that particular date. We also have continuous canopy temperature data to give an idea of leading up to that point, but I'm not presenting that today. T15, you can see there's a good bit of variability. On this date, you can see almost sort of a stair-stepping in with respect to heat tolerance. So this is where things sort of start to separate out. And then on the last date, we have the greatest level of heat tolerance regardless of irrigation treatment, which may be related to air temperature, which is interesting to me that we have this acclimation even though we have well-watered plants here. So just that by itself is interesting. All right, so what about the differences in thermal tolerance, plasticity? Essentially, I evaluated the used a homogeneity of slopes test to assess the differences in slope between the two cultivars. That was my particular approach here. But essentially, these slopes are significantly different. The 1944 had the lowest slope, so what you could say is this was more stable across the board, okay? More heat tolerance stable. And then 499 responded more so. There was a greater slope, in other words, all right, than 1944. All right, if we look at the net photosynthesis data. So this is sort of the reverse of what I was expecting. I was expecting, well, if we had greater plasticity, according to that argument earlier, then we would also have greater stability with regard to photosynthesis. And that was not the case. The most heat-tolerant stable cultivar also had the most stable photosynthesis as measured on that date. All right. If we look at yield stability, so this was for the 1 year. I'm going to present 2 years of data, but we didn't have heat tolerance data for the first year. This is for the year that we had the heat tolerance data as well, and that is that what we found was that 1944 was the most yield stable. All right. So yes, these yields are fairly close, but in terms of stability, 1944 was the most stable. Most photosynthetically stable, most yield stable, and also most stable with regard to photosystem 2 heat tolerance. I'm showing this because we do have 2 years worth of data. The line changes somewhat. Like I say, with 2 years of data, but for the year that we know that we had drought stress imposed, 1944 was the most my heat tolerance stable and yield stable as well. So just some final things. This argument about homeothermy. Well, when we had well-watered conditions, we did not see temperatures that were above that 35-degree threshold. Heat tolerance acclimation under drought, I think there's pretty good evidence here for that. And then what about thermotolerance, plasticity, and yield stability? We have a one-cultivar-to-one-cultivar comparison. This could be expanded to a large number of cultivars. But right now it looks like if a plant is more stable with regard to heat tolerance, it's also more yield stable. What is the mechanism? That, again, is still sort of an open question. And I think the utility of this is if there is some relationship here, then we can essentially screen a large number of samples and get heat tolerance data in the field and have an assessment of how stable a given cultivar is. And I'm going to need to stop at that point, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to entertain them. Yes?
Just a quick question. In canopy temperature comparisons,
yeah. Sure. And that's kind of what we've seen. I see it above. I know there's a lot of discussion about the 27 or whatever. But if you look at that 35 threshold, if it's well watered, I haven't seen where it crosses that limit. Because the other thing is it's related to VPD, as we saw earlier. If you've got higher temperatures, that influences VPD as well. So, I don't know. I think I'm out of time. So, thank you.
Thanks, John.